after her death and seeing like how passionate everyone got. Because again, like one of the things that I said is very different is like in Iran, people have like such high fucking tolerance. It's been 45, 48 years of this regime, of this thing. And now we're starting to like do something about it, right? It was like a lot of me educating myself and then me trying to like teach others of what I learned. So it was definitely one of those situations that I had to wake up myself and actually not be afraid of like telling the full truth of like how I was raised, of like the dichotomy of me wearing this at home and then the picture in my passport.
Hello and welcome to episode 38 of Let Them Eat Cake. My name is Jack. My co-hosts are John and Ace. Today we are talking to a guest from Iran, Pega, where we discuss her home country, Iran, how the state treats its people, religion, and much more. But before that, let's get to some headlines. So the Israel-Hamas war has broken from its borders and is now impacting the surrounding states. Lebanon, Egypt, Syria, and Iraq, even hitting the United States or its forces more specifically. US forces in both northern and western Iraq were targeted by one and two drones, respectively. The attacks are reportedly in response to the American support of Israel in their ongoing assault of the Palestinians. Okay. The Western Iraq attack resulted in very minor injuries, with the US forces successfully intercepting two of the drones and damaging the third, which is what caused the injuries. Further attacks were threatened, with some just followed through on. The rockets were launched from within Iraq, hitting the US airbase of Al-Hurriya, near Erbil City in northern Iraq. The group that claimed responsibility but has not been recognized by the US is called the Islamic Resistance. This is an umbrella organization that is backed by the Islamic regime of Iran. I'm done.
I can't believe you didn't say Howler.
Transition.
I can't believe you didn't say Howler City in Kurdistan. How dare you?
Yes, I yeah, they must all
It's just,
sorry, I'll do it again.
it's more, it's the thing is that it's just like using Xinjiang instead of East Turkestan. I just got to use the more common one. People need to know what I'm saying, Like when it gets into like a serious conversation about Kurdistan, then you'll see me say
Then you
things.
can
Me
talk it,
calling
yeah.
Northern Mali Azawad? No, I'm kidding.
There's something that's going to be really underreported, especially with the conflicts in the Middle East right now, is the UN mission in Haiti. 2 weeks ago, a vote by the UN Security Council secured a UN mission into Haiti. The mission was requested over a year ago. So the mission was crafted by the United States, but it's going to be run by Kenya. It's not even going to be UN controlled. This is kind of significant because the UN has a very notorious history. One of the last, well, the last time that the UN was deployed for 15 years, a massive problem with sexual assault crimes
Which
and
country was this in?
Haiti.
Oh, was that in Haiti?
By the
Shit.
UN. Yeah, well, I mean, it's everywhere the UN is, right? I mean, look at the
Right.
Congo.
I'm.
But this is going to
Yeah.
go into effect the same time they leave the Congo as well. It's going to be Jan 1st. But they're only sending 1,000 police officers to Haiti. Not military, it's just police. And all the police are doing is police work. They're not stabilizing the country or anything like that. The idea is to bring some order to a country that was brought to its knees by the 2021 assassination of its president, whose assassin was recently arrested. Funny story, the guy who killed him was an anti-corruption minister who was then fired because he was corrupt, and he got mad and hired a bunch of people to kill the guy. A few days before he's assassinated, he basically appoints his successor. The thing is a year before that, 2016 was the last election, and a year before that, all the like Congress people, whatever it's called, Parliament, their terms expired. So there was no actual Congress, right? So there's literally no legitimate Democratic person in power. So Russia and China abstained from the vote. It's basically there. So the gang violence, even leading up to the assassination, was getting out of control. But at this point, because there's literally no state there now, the politicians basically run the gangs. And they have totally like replaced police. So they do like basically just police work, but by police work, it's just like extrajudicial assassinations and shit. So probably the first thing that they'd want to do after like establishing a police force, if it works, is to probably hold elections, you know, and get a democratic thing in place so they can actually have a functioning government. But the thing is that Haiti is just going to be wrecked by climate change anyway in a few years. So even if it like goes perfectly, like it's just like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I also think it's important to note that the dominant gang at play, the G9, obviously there's other rival gangs and there's like local self-defense groups that have popped up. But the dominant gang at play is headed by this guy named Jimmy Cherizier, who's better known by his alias Barbecue, which is pretty funny. But I think it's important to note, one, he was a former police officer himself, and two, when the assassinated president was still around, he was a close ally of his, and he was kind of basically, you know, keeping order on the streets, aka like going out and committing violent acts.
Oh, yeah, they also threw down an arms embargo yesterday.
On the gangs.
Yeah, to like limit arms to the gangs.
Yeah. And so he was kind of like the president, the assassinated president's enforcer for a while. And so that's a very kind of just like thing to keep in mind. And at one point, I believe his gang had blockaded like a fuel terminal. And at one point they were even saying that members of the G9 had demanded government positions in favor of ending the fuel blockade, which they did end anyways without taking control of the government. But it was interesting that they were demanding that. So, yeah, on to the other side of the world, though, with Niger. If any of you guys remember, Niger had a coup back in July where President Bazoum was ousted by the military. And so what the military is saying now is apparently Bazoum they claimed that they foiled an escape plan by Bazoum. So they're saying that Bazoum, along with his wife and his son, who are in detention with him, two of his cooks and two members of the security forces basically attempted to escape from his detention area, which is unknown. And then the military government says that they foiled the escape plan and that the main orchestrators of the escape plan and some of their accomplices had been arrested. The military government basically claimed that Bazoum's plan was to go to like a hideout in the outskirts of like the city of capital city of Niamey. And then that they would fly out of Niger in helicopters belonging to, quote unquote, like a foreign power. And then a group of international lawyers who are representing Bazoum have called for his release. His daughter has also said that he has like his daughter's in Paris, and his daughter has said that he has lost a lot of weight while in detention, and they're saying that he's being subjected to some like inhumane conditions. His lawyers, an international group of lawyers representing him, have also denied any claims that he tried to leave or escape. However, in the meantime, as we know, a big part of the reason that the military junta or government in Niger has claimed that they needed to take control of the country was because of the deteriorating security situation and kind of the issue with jihadists in the country. The Islamic State has claimed several attacks in the country, including several attacks in the Tillabéri region in the country's southeast, near Burkina Faso's northern border and Mali's eastern border. And these attacks were carried out on August 19th, August 28th, and September 1st. And IS claims that they left 11 dead, 20 dead, and 30 dead in each of the respective attacks, and that they damaged a helicopter in these attacks. On October 2nd, they claimed to kill 60 soldiers after assaulting a convoy in the Tahoua region near its country's eastern border with Mali. And as a result, they captured weapons and trucks. They also claimed an attack on a checkpoint in Bani Bangwo in the southeast near Mali. So that's another thing. It's also important to note that a commander within like IS, kind of in like, they call it ISGS, like Islamic, so-called Islamic State in the Greater Sahara, a commander of like kind of this, we'll call it franchise of Islam, of the Islamic State, named Musa Damudo, known by the alias Musa MLNA, was killed in an airstrike with several other ISGS militants carried out by the Nigerian military in Bani Gungo in the country's south. This was probably around either like late August or early September.
Speaking about airstrikes, Myanmar, the junta has been doing a lot of more like airstrikes from like planes and helicopters and stuff. And I think this just like popped off in my head while you were reading, but some might be the Human Rights Watch or something has put out a statement basically about this escalated bombing campaign that's been going on in Myanmar. So it's been about a year since Masha Amani was killed by morality police in Iran. And just recently, again, it happened to another girl. That girl is brain dead, but the Islamic regime basically just didn't take her off life support to like delay protests. Basically like, hey, if her heart's beating, you know, then they can't protest or anything like that. And like protests didn't happen like they did before. Now we're going to learn about how Iran got the way it is. Hey, did you know that the Americans helped the Ayatollah come to power?
We have a weapon more powerful than the British Empire. And that weapon is our refusal to bow to any order but our own. Any institution but our own.
Yeah, so I'm Pega. I'm not going to go into too much detail just because I have family back home and I don't want them to get in trouble. But I've been living in America for about half of my life and the other half I've been in Iran. So I have a good understanding of how both societies kind of work and how both places look, I think.
So what's the biggest difference between those societies?
Oh, God. I think what's very different is how people present themselves compared to the system. So, for example, growing up in Iran, it's this like huge dichotomy of going out in the public and seeing all the women, and then also like being home and seeing your mom and your grandma and your aunt. And it's two different worlds. Inside the house and outside the house are like just, they're not the same places. That was like probably the biggest difference for people who don't understand, is being able to present yourself the way you actually are. It's very different, but it's not like just the difference between like Iran and America, but it's like Iran and like the rest of the world, kind of. It's really different. But also the systems, as I mentioned again, I've also been in Germany for a like short while, and I feel like one of the differences between Iran and America is like how in some sorts Americans are a little bit more traditional in the sense that like religion is like a lot bigger. Like in Iran, you wouldn't ever go to mosques or whatever unless your school's like taking you to. It was wild to me that here people my age would be like, yeah, on Sundays I go to church. I was like, oh, interesting. I never thought that'd be like a personal choice without you being like dragged in there, just like randomly choosing to like spend a day in, you know, a religious facility. So like in those terms, I feel like America is very traditional. Also, family structures are also a little bit more different, like, but that's, again, like, kind of an Eastern versus Western thing. But yeah, like, the biggest difference is definitely, like, how you present yourself and then the freedom that you have, which a lot of people take for granted. Whenever I say that, people are like, ugh. I'm like, bitch, go live in Iran. Like, no one's stopping you. Not a single soul is stopping you to go and live there. Like, no one, please take my, I'll have people like buy you a house or whatever. It's super cheap compared to like American dollars. Go. It's just, it's not the same. It's very different. It's kind of like the difference is really just some of it is like, okay, like it's an Eastern versus Western thing, right? Like, and even like in the Mediterranean, sometimes like, the culture is a lot more similar to like Iran just because like how close they are. But like in other terms, it's just like, it's very different. I don't know how to explain it, but I can like answer more questions and like talk about the specific stuff, but of course.
Well, I was always saying when you were like, oh, well, you can go live there. I'm like, whenever people whinge about America, I'm like, all right, I'll trade my passport with you.
Yeah.
I know what you're complaining about. Yeah, America's not perfect, but I would argue that it's probably one of the better places to be, even though there are obviously issues. It's very insulated. All things considered, I think America's relatively fine.
honestly, like, well, here's the thing. Go ahead, sorry.
No, go on.
What people don't understand is that in Iran, people have just a much higher tolerance for fuckery. And in America, people are like, oh my God, we have to work 8 hours a day. We're asleep.
We have to wear a mask.
It's not the same. Working 8 hours and like being a slave to the corporation is very different than waking up and seeing the price of water has quadrupled. It's so crazy. The last time I was there, I went and bought water for 1,000 tomans, which is less than, like, so 1,000 tomans is what we call the currency in home, which I think it's like, it has like 3 less zeros than the actual real. It's insane. And then the next day I went to get water and it was 1,200. And I was like, I was with a friend who was, he was Swiss. So like he looked like he's from Switzerland. And I was like, what? Did you just see like my friend? And you were like, oh, he's foreigner. Let me like raise the price. It was like, the shop owner was like really pissed off me. I was like, no, you fucking idiot. Look at the price on the bottle. It has increased. I was like,
crazy.
And for like just water. A day, it was $200, 200 toman more in just a day. I kid you not. The first time that we came here, it was like 2012. And then we went back in 2013. And people were like making fun of us for thinking that with the money we had, we could buy stuff. They would be like, it's kind of how people think that $20,000, you can buy a house. Like that's how we kind of were. We're like, oh, we can just go and buy food for the same amount that we bought like last year. And they were like, no, it's 10 times more. It's insane. Like,
so what's like, causing the fluctuation?
It's a lot of stuff. First of all, the regime is taking Iranian resources and selling it and not giving it back to people. So it's like our oil, our gas. We have so many like mines, so many like other like, natural resources. Has gets exported and we don't get the money. They hoard it. Only like 5% of the Iranian politicians have children living in Iran. All of these guys are living lavish fucking lives. I've seen them. I've worked with them here. Lavish fucking lives, and mostly in America, Canada, UK. Again, only 5% of the this is not the correct price, by the way. It's like 52,000 toman, which I cannot even read that many numbers.
I was trying to find a graph, but like none of it would do the USD. So I was like, I got to do it to the euro because it was flipped the other way. So it's just a flat line because it's obviously not going to come back up from zero. Yeah. Lebanon, we not that long, like not, it was a while ago now, but our fifth episode, we talked to my friend who lives in Lebanon. They have the same like inflation problems. And to get on that, I wanted to talk about the state of extreme poverty, because Iran has like being homeless on the street in America as compared to Iran is very different.
Yeah. Honestly, I have to admit, growing up, I grew up in a very wealthy family. I'm a little bit out of touch with like how the poor might be living in Iran. But that being said, having the privilege of being so wealthy, we had like maids and, you know, people who worked with, you know, for us, and they would be like considered the like lower class, if you want to call it. And I've never been to their like neighborhoods. This one time we had to drop off our maid to our house and we never went back. It's different. It's like, I tell you, it's built different. And now I genuinely have no idea how they live. I really wish I had like the idea of like how they are living, because how wealthy my family is, they are suffering. Again, everyone's fucking suffering there. If you're not connected to the government, you are suffering one way or another. And I genuinely cannot believe like how they are living. It got so bad that the lady that I'm talking about, we went to Malaysia this 1 year to live. And then we came back and we like asked her to come back and work for us. And the first day that she came back, she was talking about how she was paid by the government. I wish I was kidding, but she was paid by the government. And she was like, yeah, they took us on a vacation. Turns out they paid her to go and like disrupt the protesters because it was like in 2008, 2010, the Green Movement.
In June 2009, Iranians went to the polls to vote on their next president. The incumbent, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, was announced as the overwhelming winner. But many Iranians refused to believe it and took to the streets in protest. Authorities responded with violence. And to much of the world, Iran's presidential election became represented by the image of the shooting death of a young woman, Neda Agha Sultan, recorded on a shaky camera phone.
Some of them are making money like this. So we had to be like, okay, thank you so much. We're going back to Malaysia. Like, please do not come back to our house. But yeah, like she was telling us how they got busloads of people like her. They went to like, I think she was saying that they went to Tehran. It was like the regime trying to like show they have a lot of supporters. And they would literally bring people. I didn't live in Tehran, which is the capital, and brought people on the busloads. Like trying to pretend like they have supporters. And she was unfortunately also illiterate, so it wasn't like she had a lot of choices or anything. She probably had signed papers that she had no idea what it said. It's so sad, honestly. I don't know. Again, I really wish I knew how people live in Iran, because how wealthy my family is, they complain about like the inflation and the prices. So I just cannot imagine how someone who used to like barely make ends meet surviving right now. I wish I knew.
Well, like just some of the stuff that I've seen just online, like one of the most disturbing things that I've seen from poverty is just a woman who is drinking out of a puddle on the street, because like that's the only like access to water she had. And like, you know, you see a lot of dumpster diving for food and things like that. And then also, like, I've seen a lot of things where people have committed suicide just because of it.
I'm glad you said that, because it reminded me also of, like, a lot of women doing prostitution right now. Because, and one thing that, like, people don't understand is that, like, okay, in Iran, like, you go to school, you come out, you don't have a job. It's not like you will get a job. Like to me, I always think to myself, I'm like, how do people in Iran find jobs? Because it doesn't register with me. The only way I would know how someone would find a job is if you knew someone. That's it. It doesn't matter. You can be the most brilliant person. You can be like the smartest person, have so much potential, and then at the end of the day you'd be like either jobless or scrubbing toilets or whatever, because there is no social security thing, there is no food stamps, like if you're poor they're like, well, don't exist. It's so sad, honestly.
It's funny how many parallels there are to China.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
China's going through the exact same thing as people going through university. They've been told, oh, you go to university, you'll have a guaranteed job, and now they can't even find work.
Oh no, in Iran, you know you're not gonna have a guaranteed job. Yeah. Like you just go to university.
To add to what he said, what about university? How does that work out? Like why? Because I know there's colleges in Iran. Like what's the point of going to college if that's the case?
So there are two colleges, right? There are one state funded. And then the other one is also state funded, but it's considered private. So one of them is considered, I think the private one is called Danishgah-e-Azad. And then the one that's state funded is called Danishgah-e-Sarasari. They each have different campuses all around the country in like all different cities. Everyone goes to school, and schooling is hard. I'm not saying schooling is easy at all in Iran. It's not. It's really hard. I think people go to school not because they want to find a job, but because they either want to immigrate or like this is what you do as an Iranian. You get an education. That's the part that you can play, right? John was telling me like America doesn't want Iran to have nuclear weapon, and I'm like, Iran's not gonna have nuclear weapon. Those smart people, they are either in prison or escaping. They are not getting jobs in like the nuclear plants. They're not. So here's the rank. It's the regime and their children. Those children are all working in like other countries. They're not even working, honestly. They're just like mooching off of Iranian blood money. Then there's lower grades of these people, right? Like the people who work for the IRGC and like they are willing to die for them. And those are well connected, right? But not very well paid because they're mostly brainwashed. And those people are the people who get the jobs. And then there are the other people. So those people, you can like, if you have like a wealthy family or whatever, they can make you a business, I think. Honestly, it's whenever people tell me that they used to work in Iran, I'm shocked because it's really hard to find a job. Again, I've never job hunted in Iran, but I also know that because of the cultural way and structures, you are going to be taken care of by your parents, even if you're like in your 40s. As long as you need help, your parents are going to be there. You're going to live with your family. Even if you're making like very little, at the end of the day, like everyone's pulling money together and trying to like get at least a one bedroom apartment and six people living together. A friend of ours, her mom was a teacher. They were four girls and one boy and a mom. They all lived in a one bedroom, like tiny apartment. That was it. That was one bedroom, one bed that like they took turns sleeping on. And that was it. That's how much you can make as a teacher.
One, I just wanted to add on to the whole nuclear thing. This is why it's so devastating that Mossad kills any nuclear scientists that Iran has. So like a lot of
I don't think it's not Mossad.
Oh,
believe
no, they totally do. They totally do. Mossad is very open about it.
Definitely, like, yeah, they, but also... Like,
but also,
the
there is a factor of the,
lot of them
the
too.
Regime does lie about it too. Like, there's a Vice thing where they talk about like the nuclear assassinations, and they like it's so planted. And Vice is very open about how set up that is. But there's like a guy just standing there. And he's like, "Yeah, I was in this car. They totally attached a bomb to the door and blew it up." But they have totally done it. Like, that's the thing is there's not many nuclear scientists. They didn't
honestly
plan for their own longevity.
Here's the thing, John. Here's the thing: the number of people have died, brilliant people. I wish I remembered all of their names, but there are multiple incidences of scientists being killed off by the Islamic regime. Like us Iranians, our problem is not with like Israel. It's not. Like Israel could never kill as many Iranians as like the Islamic regime is. They couldn't even like get close to how many Iranians, how many brilliant minds this regime has killed at all. Also, like, living in Iran, I've lived in Iran. It's so funny. The regime is, they commit terror attacks and they're like, ISIS did it. And ISIS is like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah. Can you explain what the IRGC is for people?
Yes. So, oh my God, I have like the best clip too. I'm going to have to send it to you.
A lot of Iranians that I know in the West did support the nuclear deal up until the protests, though.
Honestly, and I hate to admit, I was one of them. I really hate to admit it.
I did too, but after the protest, now.
Exactly why. Starting from 2015, actually, I remember we were in New York and there was this group of protests. Someone I know is an international journalist. And this person was like, "Oh, there is a protest right now in New York. Let's go join and see what's happening." And it was a group of Iranians, the students, everyone, and a group of Americans protesting the possibility of war. And like, it was very heavy.
Was this
like,
after Qasem Soleimani was killed?
No. This was 2015.
Okay.
This was like,
okay,
years ago. And like, we didn't know what's happening, really. Well, at least I didn't know. And I was like, yeah, like, I definitely don't want war in my country. And I definitely want the like nuclear deal to go through because like, I don't want sanctions on my country. And then it wasn't until like the start of this protest that this person that I know, who's a international journalist, was, you know, that those were NAIAC, right? The people in New York who joined for their meetings. And I was like, I had no idea until now.
And what is that? What is that?
So NAIAC is this lobby group and also a money laundering machine for the Islamic regime.
Makes sense.
In America.
Makes sense. Yeah, they're really good with the money laundering. Hezbollah is insane with it. Like, we got this whole used car thing going. where they like sell used cars out in Africa to like make the money disappear.
Now they do it through funneling money here and like paying people who I call PR workers for the Islamic regime. And they spew nonsense, basically. And another thing that they do is they heavily, heavily fund politicians, mostly Democrats. Ilhan Omar actually got like an award from them. I didn't know they gave awards. But like, that's what they do. They launder money. They make people disappear. I knew this girl who was like Iranian born, but like here, to Iranian parents. She was in Iran like once when she was three, and she's like diehard Democrat, like diehard fucking, like she was like fucking like tearing herself apart when like Trump became president. And she was like very involved in like protests and whatnot. And then in November 2019, when the Iran protest was going on, I noticed she's like silent. And I was like, interesting, because like you were crying every single day saying, now that Trump is president, your grandma is no longer going to be able to come see you because there's like a travel ban, which it was an immigration ban. And also Obama didn't let my grandma come visit. So it's not like Iranians were like constantly flying to like New York every single day, coming to like visit and like getting visas like left and right. Like it wasn't like the case. Like people weren't getting visas before Trump anyways. But like she was tearing herself apart. Like, oh my God, like my people can no longer come. My family can no longer come visit me. I'm going to graduate and my grandma's not going to be here to see me.
The U.S. government, basically by crippling sanctions, is partially responsible for the economic crisis that Iranian people are in. So even if they're not spinning the protests or the violence, they're part of the problem.
We have to remember that fuel prices are heavily subsidized, have been heavily subsidized in Iran. And still, with the almost 300% increase, it's much lower, relatively lower compared to world prices. And this has been an economic problem for the government, the high amount of money that they've been spending on subsidies. And the government has been struggling to somehow manage this. But it seems like they basically rolled it out or mismanaged it.
Protests continued in almost 100 cities and towns across Iran. And in some areas, it has become very, very violent. On both sides, there's been a lot of vandalism in different towns. And
no one's reported over 1,000 except for a few political groups outside the country. And for the State Department to come out with a number like that without any sourcing, without any backup from credible human rights organizations who are doing professional work documenting this, it's just, it hurts the credibility of the State Department, and it also is not a very beneficial thing in this situation.
So given that, what do you think the aim of the State Department is here? Why would they be wanting to hype it up so much if that's what they're actually doing?
Well, it's been the policy of the Trump administration since President Trump came into office to portray Iran as this super bad actor.
And then the November 2019 happened, and I was like, for a person who really was like concerned Iranians cannot travel to America anymore, even though they never could, you seem to be very like just radio silent about this situation, like what's happening in Iran right now. And she legit was like, I work with very strong people and I can destroy your life. Don't come at me like this. And then I later on found out that she also works for NAIAC. I was like, she could literally fuck my life off. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'll take back whatever I said. Like,
let me pull up this video real quick. So we'll start off from there.
For the IRGC.
The Revolutionary Guards were created in order to preserve the revolution so that the United States could not carry out a counter coup or a coup.
A counter coup.
In the country.
And the
counter-coup, could we please replay this? I love that.
This is something I say, is that there's no such thing as a counter-revolutionary. That's like some Stalinist garbage, you know?
Right. No, I love how he's
in
like...
In order to preserve the revolution so that the United States could not carry out a counter coup or a coup, not a counter coup, but a coup in the country.
And the,
why'd they leave that in? Like, he even corrected himself. Like,
right? I always joke, I'm like, this guy was never heard of again. Like, this guy is just never heard of again. Like, you do not go out, like telling the truth like this in Iran and stay alive. But
to add on to his point, a lot of people, especially Democratic people, because I mean, we were already shitting on him, so we can continue because we shit on both sides here. On the Democrat side, they think that the United States is like pro-regime change and like controls the regimes and overthrows regimes and all that stuff. So as an Iranian, I just want to hear your opinion on the United States policy of regime change that obviously has been taking place in your country.
Okay, so I don't know how much you might agree or disagree with me, but the Islamic regime was put in by the Americans, by Carter specifically. And they're not going to let him go.
That's a hot take.
That is a hot take, but he literally said it was.
It really is.
It was a coup. I am so sorry. Here's the whole gist of it, right? So Iran and Iranian, like everywhere else, people wanted to be like, you know, like read about communism. It was like the 70s and 60s and 70s and even the 50s. And a lot of people were like talking about this type of like, you know, ideologies. And America was very friendly with the king. And I'm not like defending him. He did a lot of good for Iran, but I'm not defending him. And America was very friendly, so they were like, why don't you just, you know, arrest them? Arrest the communists, just like everywhere else. So he did that. And I think he might have, and I think he, like, might have even, like, executed some of the, like, political prisoners. I don't know. Honestly, I have to go look at the data. He did that.
He did.
And then...
He definitely did.
He did? He did.
I've read a lot and, like, studied a lot about Iran as well here.
Yeah. But anyways, so...
Not as much as the Ayatollah did, though. That's for sure.
I'm gonna tell the whole story. So, it's so funny because, like, Iran got arrested, right? Every head of opposition got arrested. Some got executed. But out of, like, all these people, Khomeini was, like, exiled in France, of all places? What? You're telling me everyone else needs to be imprisoned except for this guy? Who letters have come out that he was communicating with the White House saying he will give them cheap oil. And it's... I'm like, they had this guy in their back pocket. Like, the West had this guy in their back pocket. Because the Shah started to raise gas prices on the West. And they were like, oh, no. The whole revolution thing was, like, started by the, like, Cinemarex's, like, fire, right? Biggest terror attack of its time. Like, what? 700 people were in the cinema. Something about, like, 450 died. And people were unhappy with the king for a lot of reasons. Mostly, and unfortunately, back in, like, the 50s and whatnot, people were very, like, religious. Like, people who were alive back in that time tell me that, like, in Iran, so many people would not buy TV because, like, they're naked women on TV. And by naked woman, they mean, like, someone dressed like me. So, like, they were religious. And I always say, I'm like, the biggest mistake Shah made was thinking that, like, Iran was ready for all this freedom. People do not buy TV because they're naked women on TV. You cannot give free daycare so women can go and work in the society. You cannot do that. Like, they're not ready. They're very clearly not ready. And that's why I, like, consider myself a Marxist and not, like, a Leninist. Because I don't think that, like, you can do this in a day. You cannot just, like, switch around. You cannot take...
Saudi Arabia has similar problems, you know? Like, the whole reason why Al-Qaeda exists and wants to overthrow them is because of this exact thing.
But Saudi Arabia was, like, a lot smarter. they are still very slowly trying to progress.
Yeah.
Becoming a non-American puppet.
They've actually been, I think they've been doing well lately. You know, they've been charting.
Yeah, they've been doing
really
well.
They did a peace talk with Ukraine, and Ukraine said the peace talk was productive because they were able to bring in like India and China. So Ukraine is like, you know, negotiating with
them. They just did it to Iran, and it's very concerning. They're doing really, that really slow progress worked so well for them. People are still
What was the name of the Shah's secret police that started the fire there?
Oh, it wasn't, that's the whole thing. It wasn't Sovbok.
That's the whole thing. They tried to cover it up and then they did an investigation that it was his secret police.
No, that's the whole thing. Like,
oh no, that's right. No, you are right. I'm getting it backwards.
It's Islamic
regime. Right.
They did it. And people were so unhappy with like
they
how
they blamed
like,
them at first. That's right.
That like they wanted to believe that it's Sovbok. They were like, we want to believe it's Sovbok. It's so funny because like in Iran, like before the revolution, no one really cared about like what Sovbok does. Like in a regular daily basis, like not a single soul was like, oh my god, I wonder like what Sovbok has on me. Like, you know, unless you were doing something, maybe if you were like an activist in university or you were like an extreme like Islamist or whatever, like maybe Sovbok had something on you. I'm sure they had something on you. But like on a regular basis, people didn't give a shit. Like most people didn't give a shit, right? Like ordinary people like my grandparents, they probably didn't even know like what Sovbok is, right? Like it was just like they were living very ordinary lives.
Yeah, a lot of it was information warfare from the Ayatollah himself.
It really was. And
yeah, there's a lead up, you know, like he sets the sets it up by using the propaganda of those secret police.
Yeah. And like people are like, so many people died. And after, even after like the Islamic regime became the, you know, like after the revolution, a lot of people had lost their, you know, loved ones. So they didn't want to just like let it go. At this point, they were like, no, we don't care that the regime has changed. Like we want justice, especially if you say that the old regime did it, like bring those people forward, like let them pay for the crimes they did. And the people who actually committed the crimes right now, they work as like the Supreme Court in Iran. They are the Supreme Court members. They literally, the people who committed that crime are sitting on the Supreme Court in Iran. The Supreme Court in America is rigged, is fucked, but you cannot tell me it's the same as the Supreme Court in Iran.
What you were saying earlier, just to, you know, to add to the point you were making about how the U.S. really wanted oil prices lower, this is a little piece of history I have here that I always like to play about that time period. So,
is it the blue-eyed and brown-eyed people?
This is totally about oil. I think he does say some dumb shit. He says a lot of dumb shit.
Yeah.
Persian Gulf.
All right.
But they do call it Arabian Gulf.
Well, they can do many things.
And they find an irony in the oil situation in this. They say, we impose the embargo against the United States, for instance, and the European countries. That drives the cost of oil up. Who benefits from the embargo? Iran, the Shah. Shah, who is the friend of Israel, benefits from the high price of oil caused by our embargo.
Yeah, but only enemies of Iran could have told you that. First of all, why friend of Israel?
Why?
In what sense?
Or economic cooperation.
How much?
I don't know the extent of
it. Doesn't come even to $2 or $3 million a year.
He's very angry about that.
You can get that kind of intelligence.
That's because normally journalists who ask these kind of questions, he would have killed at this point. So
even in reading American newspapers.
It is common knowledge that they trained or helped to train your secret police, the Savak. You do have a relationship with the Israelis, there's no doubt.
Yes, that's ridiculous, but we have the same relationship with all the friendly Arab countries that we train also in this country. This means nothing.
The industrial nations, among them, of course, the United States, feel that you, sir, have pushed too far, too fast, and that you can trigger worldwide depression by doing it. Henry Kissinger says so. Sheikh Yamani, the oil minister of Saudi Arabia.
That suits him. I'm not talking about Yamani because...
So, I think there's another point in here where they're talking about the price of oil, and he's like, I don't care. No, I don't care. It's going to be high because I say it's high.
The question was literally, you brown-eyed people are raising the price of gas and oil. And he says, well, maybe you blue-eyed people need to... You blue-eyed people... He actually speaks English a lot better than me. But you blue-eyed people need to start paying what the oil is actually worth.
How did you react to the news of the Kurdish... the Kurdish girl that got killed by the morality police? How did you react to that, and how was your sort of... organizing? Were you protesting here?
So here's the thing, right? Living in Iran, like, a woman dying in because of like their hijab wasn't like first time news to me. Like when I saw the news, I was like, fuck, another woman died because of hijab. That was my reaction. I was very sad. I was like, another woman. That is crazy. And I genuinely thought that like the rest of the world would just be like, oh, another woman died in Iran because she wasn't wearing hijab, like, and then move on from it. And I was shocked to find out that like the protest went on, because like I knew that like someone's gonna go out and like protest, right? Like I was like, and I was so like just broken hearted. I was like, I know like she died, but like I don't think anything's gonna happen, because this sort of news comes out of Iran like all the time. It wasn't the first time I'd heard something like this, but I was like surprised that like the movement went on. And I've always been like involved one way or another. I don't have like a big social network, but I've always tried to at least like educate people about like what's happening in Iran. And to add to the like question that John asked me before, up until this very moment, like a lot of people were for the nuclear deal. A lot of us Iranians, some people were a lot like smarter than me, obviously, and they knew like what's happening. A lot of people were like saying the truth for like a long time, right? They were like, in Iran, you would die if you don't wear hijab. And to me, it was like, well, my culture wasn't like this, right? Like my dad wouldn't have done this. So my Iran was different. My Iran was the family, right? The home that I knew. And because again, like I was little when I moved out, and again, I'm a very like stationary person. So I'm not like out in the like world a lot. I have a very small network all the time. So like my Iran was like, you know, safe because I was always home, and my parents were, and my family just like raised me and my brother as like completely equal. But like, it wasn't until the whole movement started that I was like, I'm doing people like Mahsa Amini a huge disservice by not telling the full truth about what's happening in Iran. My experience was very different than the experience of girls who went to like finished high school in Iran, girls who went to college in Iran, girls who are, you know, dating in Iran, girls who are trying to live in Iran, girls who are trying to like have their own lives in Iran. My experience is not the same. And like by me telling the half truth of my experience, I'm really doing a disservice to people. So like, I really want to like apologize to like Iranians just for like my pure ignorance of like trying to make people believe that like my family life was the like full extent of like life in Iran. So yeah, to answer your question, I feel like after her death and seeing like how passionate everyone got, because again, like one of the things that I said is very different is like in Iran, people have like such high fucking tolerance, it's been 45, 48 years of this regime, of this thing. And now we're starting to like do something about it, right? It was like a lot of me educating myself and then me trying to like teach others of what I learned. So it was definitely one of those situations that I had to wake up myself and actually not be afraid of like telling the full truth of like how I was raised, of like the dichotomy of me wearing this at home and then the picture in my passport, which, by the way, whichever airport I go to, they have to send like two other people to come actually verify that this is me. And I'm like, which idiot would travel with an Iranian passport? Like, why do you think like if it was the opposite, I'd be like, okay, they have a point. Like I could have forged an, I don't know, powerful passport, but like it's an Iranian passport. No one's going to pretend they just, you can go anywhere with that shit.
Yeah, if you were going to put the effort into making a fake passport, you would go with Japan or America or something stronger. Or yeah, yeah. Literally anything else.
Singapore is like one of the strongest. Yeah, yeah, like anything, not the Iranian. Like every time I go to like, anytime I show this thing, they're like, and they like call their supervisor and their supervisor is like, this cannot be the same person. It's insane. But yeah, like I had to tell people that's true. What you see is actually true. I had to tell a lot of my friends. I remember like a lot of my friends, I wanted them to come and see where I was born and where I was raised. And after this, I told them, I was, no, I'm not going back. You guys are not going to come. You guys are not going. No, absolutely not. One thing that like pisses me off is all this travel influencers. And recently,
I brought this up. That's when they were giving out visas. And that's how I got one right before COVID and just basically threw my money away. It was all these travel influencers.
It's so insane. And now they're doing it to Afghanistan. And here's the thing, right?
I was actually going to go into that next. So please continue.
I used to see this and I used to be like, oh my God, someone's showing my country. People would ask me like, do you guys have car? People were like, how did you get to America? Expecting me to say like, I don't know, I swam or like something. People would ask me things like, do you guys have water? Do you guys have like electricity? Oh my God, you guys are like this, like that's insane. And I was like, oh my God, like people can see what Iran actually is. And then after the movement, I was like, oh fuck, they're going showing this like rosy view, and meanwhile people cannot afford to buy onions. People can
literally another comparison to China was China does the
regime. The regime literally was like, do not eat meat, do not eat meat. And then these travel influencers were like, oh my God, everything's so cheap. Yeah, because the currency is fucking plummeted. Like, what the fuck? Of course everything's cheap when you take dollars.
They literally need the USD and euros to come in to sustain at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So in Afghanistan, literally just gave the country to the Taliban. So a lot of the people who do get out, obviously, are people who actually have some kind of wealth there. And yeah, there is exactly also that same thing where they'll be disconnected, you know, because like a lot of my friend Ghazi says, like, if if you're living in a cave and you can't eat, do you really care if you can't see an Indian movie? And all those people were able to leave, but all the people who were poor stayed behind. And it just put it into a dire situation. I just want to see when Afghanistan gets to the point where travel influencers, well, they already kind of do, but, you know, serious stuff, like regular, like the Travel Channel is there doing a show there. I want to see how long it takes for that to happen.
I was pissed off. There is this girl that I used to like follow. She used to work for Nas Daily. And she was in Afghanistan like a couple of months ago. I was like, what the fuck, bitch? Like, how disrespectful can you be to go to Afghanistan, show this rosy-ass pictures, this, like, fun experiences you've had, when literally news was coming out of, like, new restrictions on, like, women going out without the burqa? And I was like, oof. What a wild fucking bitch. And then she was like, oh my God, you just don't understand my content. I'm just trying to like show the beauty of Afghanistan to like everyone else. I'm like, shut the
fuck up. She got a paycheck.
Yeah,
and that's what she was instructed to make.
Like, the scary part about that is that you'd have to work with Sirajuddin Haqqani because he does the passports and interior shit. That's the scary part about that. That's like working with Bin Laden himself to go into Afghanistan.
I mean, some people are like, if it pays well, like, I'll see the devil himself. Who the fuck cares? I mean, some people literally are willing to sell people and earn their blood money so they can live a comfortable life in America. Some people can do it. Some people, literally right now, you can join NIAC and become a PR for the Islamic regime and start spewing fucking nonsense about how amazing life in America is. There's this bitch.
What's you mean name? Life in Iran?
No, there. Yeah. Well, like, okay. Hoda Katebi, I think. Her videos, like, go viral every couple years. It's that bitch who's asked, how do you feel about the nuclear weapons in Iran? She's talking with, like, Fox News, I think. And, like, everyone praised this bitch, right? What they don't understand is that she's being paid by the Islamic regime. She literally has never... She was born in, like, what, Nebraska, I think? Makes money, lives a very comfortable life. She's a renowned fashion influencer somehow. This bitch is, like, literally selling people for money. And she's gone on multiple fucking interviews saying, oh, the morality police, they're just fashion police. Ugh, don't be silly. They'll just, like, stop you and they're like, why are you wearing socks and sandals? Ugh, they're so nice. No one's getting fucking flogged in Iran. This is a bitch, yes.
She's got a, isn't this the Iran protest right here? You know, free the...
Yeah. When you read her stuff, you're like, oh, cool.
That's the thing about information warfare. They think it's just like the China shit where they just pay people 50 cents to post about China. It's so much deeper. It's
Iran's
insane.
PR is like great work. I'm like, you guys do the work no one could. The way they sell these like fake information, they buy so much empathy, legitimize the Islamic regime, while making people the villains. It's insane. She did not attend any of the protests. And then somehow, like, if you go up, I think it's New York Times or is it like LA Times or something, like literally introducing her as like the op-ed. Yeah, Los Angeles Times. It's like she is now suddenly like the face of the revolution while simultaneously being like, yeah, people just want, you know, to not have to wear hijab anymore. But also, they never had to wear hijab because we just had like fashion police telling them like, don't dress like this, dress a little bit nicer, girl. Like, ugh, you're literally selling people. People are literally fucking dying in Iran.
I'm more connected with Kurdish movements.
Yeah. Oh, I love this.
Hey, what, have you seen this video? So this girl, she's calling out inauthentic people who are promoting the women's revolution and just like how they're full of shit and like everything they say is being twisted, even though they're showing the same stance where it's like, oh, we're actually, we're pro women, we're pro this revolution, and we're pro, you know, getting rid of the hijab.
Yeah. از خانم فلاح پهلوی میپرسن که معنی زن زندگی آزادی چیه؟ ببینید خودتون.
زن زندگی آزادی.
خب زن همیشه در تاریخ ایران مهم بوده، زندگی هم برای که زن مادر بچه ها رو به دنیا میاره و آزادی هم که خب الان اینا با تمام شجاعت آمدن و این شعارها رو میدن.
زن همیشه در تاریخ ایران مهم بوده؟ در تاریخ ایران آثار شاه، من حالا خیلی قبلیش رو یادم نیست، یعنی نمیدونم اطلاعی ندارم، ولی خب میدونم که برده بودن. منظور برده بودنشونه دیگه. آره، منظور کالا بودنشه. آها، زندگی یعنی زن بچه رو به دنیا میاره. وای، مرسی که گفتی. آزادی هم دیگه، بچه ها میاد خیابون، یعنی آزادی دیگه. خواب دیدی خیلی باشه. رهبر عبدالله آجلان واسه اولین بار زن رو به عنوان اولین ملت به اسارت گرفته شده در تاریخ معرفی کرد و پس از آن ایدئولوژی زن رو در تاریخ 1998 میلادی ارائه داد. زن زندگی آزادی یا همان جنجیان آزادی؟ یعنی تا زن آزاد نشود جامعه آزاد نخواهد شد. خانم فرح پهلوی.
All right. There is more to that, but you know.
Yeah.
We don't need to play 5 minutes of a clip.
I know. No, honestly, there are truth in both sides. But like, it's one of those things that like I don't really know how to like what is the proper reaction for me, because I myself am not Kurd. I'm a Persian. I'm a Persian Iranian. In Iran, people speak my language. So like I don't know the full extent of like the Kurdish experience, right? Like I know the extent of other people's experiences because I'm also like Lur, which is kind of like a subcategory of like a Persian. Like it's a different dialect, but like it's very intelligible, like both languages. Like kind of imagine like Irish English and like American English. Like they're very similar, right? A Farsi person who's never heard Lori probably is going to be like, what do you exactly mean? Like, could you clarify? But like a Lori person can like be like, okay, I totally get it. And I don't know if it's because like, you know, Farsi is obviously like more heard and like everyone would understand it a lot easier. I don't know. Again, like it's hard for me to tell because I grew up hearing both.
Is it the national language? Farsi?
Farsi, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting is like even in Pakistan there's like certain loan words that come from Farsi. So like all through the region, like I'll hear it as the same language when they say certain mm-hmm. things, but it'll be a completely different language just from loan words.
So yeah, actually, so Farsi is like a big area that used to speak Farsi because of like, you know, Persian Empire and like what used to be like ancient Iranian empires were like a lot faster, and like they did cover those areas, and also it's like an Indo-European language, so like it's a lot of similarity to like Indian languages as well. There are like a lot of words that like Indians use that we're like, oh, I know this word. So it's like one of those things. But as I was saying, like I don't know what the proper response would be from me. So that's Lori where you see but it kind of comes a little bit lower in the Zagros Mountains. But yeah, Dari is basically a type of Persian, and Tajik is Persian as well. But they kind of wanted to like separate the Tajik from the neighbors so they could divide and conquer. So they called them Tajik people. But that's not really important, this discussion. But what I was saying is that like, I don't know what would be the proper response for me as an like Persian Iranian. And I don't want to like sound insensitive to like what a Kurdish would say, because again, like I don't know how they live, right? Like I genuinely have no idea if they are happy being Iranians, if they want to be like a separate entity. Like I just genuinely don't know. But there is a lot of like, I feel like nationalistic ideologies.
To kind of help out your thought a little bit, I mm-hmm. noticed just observing the protests that there was a divide between Kurdish protesters and Persian protesters, because there was a more nationalist where they still recognize Iran and that they're all Iranian, but they're all against the regime. But the Kurds are not only against the regime, they're against
the state of Iran.
Yeah. So
the people of Iran, there's definitely a divide over
nationalism. Yeah. For sure.
So like, I feel like there is a like huge nationalism thing amongst like many Kurds that they just want to be like its separate entity. And like, to some extent, I'm like, I understand, right? Like, especially like when you read the Kurdish genocide of like Iraq, right? Like it was in the '80s, or like how in like Turkey, you weren't allowed to like speak Kurdish if you were a Kurd. Like, I understand that, right? Like, I understand all of these. And it's very sad that like their region is now divided between like four countries. It's kind of like how probably like North Koreans and South Koreans feel. We want to go visit our families, and it's now this like arbitrary divide of like a border. But sometimes when they say some things, it's a little bit offensive. Again, I don't want to like disregard their experience because it's not the same as mine. But like some stuff that they say, it's very offensive. And I'm like, anyone could have died. Like, okay, in Iran, like there is a huge oppression against religion minorities, right? There are the Baha'i people that the regime literally says they are najis, which means like impure. It's also the same word they use for dogs, and dogs are illegal in Iran. And so are Baha'i people. Literally, they say if you enter a Baha'i person's house, you're going to be impure. Like, that's the view of like people who have this faith. And it's even like a subset of like Islam. So I know there's a huge oppression when it comes to religion minorities. I don't know if that's the case with Kurds as well. I genuinely don't know. If that is the case, it's horrible. And I would understand why they want, you know, things to be very different, right?
It varies from region to region, but yeah. Just because of Iran's economy especially, the Kurds in the under Iran are just especially poor compared to every other region.
Yeah, that's another thing that, thank you so much for bringing that up. The Islamic regime has done a really excellent job at keeping the borders very unsafe and very poor.
Yeah, so they kill porters all the time. I was going to say the Baluch as well.
Yeah,
have the Baluch experience.
Are constantly being jeopardized by like drug cartels and, you know, and the neighboring borders, and the regime kind of treats them as if they are the problem. And it's the 21st century. People in Baluchistan don't have like birth certificates. Like the poverty there is probably not something I can like fathom. To like to me, poverty was like when I was living here and, you know, we were a student and it was kind of tough. I cannot imagine the poverty they experience. It's like insane. And that's also the experience of Kurds probably as well. Not probably as well, like I know that is their experience. There is this thing called the Kurbars, which are the Kurds
who have to,
like, have to literally bring essentials from like other countries just because the regime literally doesn't provide shit for them. So like, I understand that my treatment, as bad as it is not the same as a religion minority or like a ethnic minority. With that being said, it's kind of disheartening to hear like some of the things that they say, just because it's one thing to want freedom, but it's another thing to insult an entire group of people for yours. That's all I'm gonna say. I have a lot of respect for Kurdish people and like a lot of respect for a lot of like all other Iranian minorities. So yeah.
So here's just a map. Yeah. Just showing like this is Balochistan right here, right? And this is from 2008 heroin exports. Like it's all gotta go through there. So just to add to what you're saying.
So those borders are like very dangerous. So to answer your very early question of like what is the IRGC, after the coup and the Islamic regime coming in power, they had this brilliant idea of keeping the army, which was there to protect the borders, to protect the people from like invaders, but adding a new type of army that protects the representative of God here. So like, it's, here's what, like one thing that like people don't understand about like a theocracy is that like religion is government. It's the same thing. There is no divide to the people. Like this guy and God are like, this guy is communicating with God. Like he has his phone number, basically.
I found an even better picture, because that one, it kind of cuts off. This one is even simpler, and believe it or not, it's coming from Russia Today. So this, I think, really is better. I was trying to find one that shows just how it's five leaves of like the same flower, you know, and the different divisions between them. But they have a space force as well.
Yeah, so the Basijis. Oh yeah, those are the people who go to like Syria and kill people. So the Basiji, they are. You can literally be like, I want to join the Basij, and they're like, please, and they work for free probably. They're brainwashed. They are like, they are dangerous people who are just trying to defend the regime. Like that's their goal. Like, you do not want to, whenever you're going out, like in Iran, you're like, oh, this guy's the best EG. Like, don't walk near him because he might just like drag you to fucking prison because you're like not properly dressed.
Yeah, and they are the ones who killed the girl as well.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. They're the morality like, police is a division of them.
Yeah, okay. It's kind of the ground forces. Yeah, I think it's supposed. But I honestly don't know. It's like all very like convoluted. The like police department is basically so. Also, we have like two type of police.
Yeah, there's all, the yeah. Police. They're like a separate police as well.
Yeah. So the blue police does like the traffic policing. So like if you're speeding or not, they're both very corrupt. And the green police is basically the morality police. That's like all it does is like, oh, you're walking. And like, I can see your hair, get in the van. If you're walking with your brother, that's like a scary one. Because they're going to be like boyfriend and girlfriend. And they're just going to like take you to the van. You cannot with your like wife or whatever. It's very dangerous. But as long as you have like the paperwork, you'd be fine. But with your girlfriend? Oh. And that's
they're
when,
very
like,
similar
people...
to the mafia as well. Because there's a lot of criminal... aspects to them.
Oof, that's what
and
I was
like,
gonna
there's
say.
Like motorcycle gangs within them, and you'll see like especially the protests, there'll be all these footage, and it's just we'll see videos where they're just stabbing one of them to death on the street because he was in plain clothes and they identified him, and everyone's celebrating it because these guys are the worst.
If you're willing to like kill people for your ideology, like you're a dangerous fucking animal. So and also humans are the most dangerous.
I do think
ever.
The attraction like, and power they get is part of it as well. Like the power reinforces the ideology that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's like it's a lot of mind games, and they probably get like money as well. I mean, again, no one gets jobs. So like the little money that comes in, they're probably like celebrating too. So it's just crazy. Before the protests and whatnot, like just like normally, they just like randomly pull cars aside to like interrogate you, just like randomly. Most of the times they just like pull expensive cars aside, so you just like pay them off. It's literally like mafia.
Yeah, you're it's an
like,
extortion racket.
Like they literally are like, how much are you willing to pay to not go to like prison because you can afford it? You're like driving a German car. Yeah, like people in Iran cannot afford cars. Like the Iranian made cars are so expensive. You cannot afford the car. It's not like if you can afford a foreign car, like, you are fucking rich. You're balling. So like they're going to stop you for sure and like try to get their, you know, monthly bonus. And now there's civil facial recognitions and whatnot that identify women who are not wearing hijab. And it was like a thing before, like even like when I was visiting last time I was visiting. No, well, was it? Yeah, it was. I think either me or my mom weren't wearing like our hijab in the car, and my brother got a like text message that he has to like come and like get his license unfucked or whatever because now you have a target on your back. So you have to do all this going to this court and that court and like do so much fucking paperwork and like it takes months to take that shit off of you. And now they're sending messages to women who are not wearing hijab in their cars and saying that like, oh, you're gonna be banned from leaving the country, which is a very common thing, by the way. Mamnun Khuruj. It's really common that you just like are banned from leaving the country ever. They know it's a prison. They're like, okay, like you're saying. And it's impossible to get that ban off of you. Like it's impossible. Most of the times you just probably have to go to like prison. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Well, before we get into a wrap up, we'll wrap up right after this. Can you tell me about your necklace?
Yeah, so this is the Zoroastrian symbol. It's kind of like our cross, but basically the Zoroastrian, and it's also what inspired Nietzsche's writings a lot. It basically says like good words, good thoughts, and good deeds. That's like the pillar of their religion, which is an ancient Persian religion as well. To us Iranians, it's kind of like us trying to like hold on to our culture. And because, you know, after Islam kind of invaded Iran, people were not happy. Obviously, like, we had the choice of stay and convert or leave and or also you can die. Like, that's a third option, obviously. And, like, a lot of, like, Iranians had to mass migrate to India. So the fact that we still celebrate a lot of, like, our ancient celebrations as a testament of, like, how much we didn't want this religion to begin with. So, yeah, it's kind of, like, to me, it's not, like, much of a religion symbol as it is, like, me just trying to remind myself of, like, all the sacrifices of, like, people before me to, like, let me know that, like, this is something that, like, was a part of my past. Before we wrap up, can I just say something really important? So in Iran, the times, like, Western people say things like, the reason why I killed someone, right? And it just, like, shows the pure privilege and ignorance of, like, the West, thinking that you, like, as an Iranian, you have the privilege to, like, bring your case forward to the court. You have the privilege to, like, get a lawyer, be represented. You have the privilege to, like, not get a false confession because you weren't tortured or whatever. Like, that's all, like, really crazy privileges that, like, people in the West don't realize they have. A lot of the people who were convicted of waging war against God, well, they were just protesting for their
human rights. What an absurd charge.
No, that
waging,
like,
war against God.
They'll charge musicians with this shit. If you insult the regime in your music, they'll charge you with it. Like, there's been, like, musicians who have been killed
because of their lyrics. The regime is representing the God. Like, this is a representation of God. So, like, if you're against them, you're raging guard. Like, you're
also
raging war against
when they
them.
Charge you with this, they do a shitload of mock executions to you, and then may execute you or kick you out of the country. It depends how what they decide.
You know.
So you go through a series of mock executions where they make you think you're gonna die.
Oh yeah. Also, they're not even, like, gonna tell the family members that, like, they did it. They'll just, like, oh, you want to come pick it up, the body.
Yeah.
So, like, this is something that, like, people don't understand. Please go and watch the case on Navid Afkari. He was charged for killing a Basiji, which he didn't. He was forced, tortured to give a false confession, and was executed a couple days after his ruling. We really tried to, like, raise awareness about him, and it wasn't enough. They executed him, and it's heart-wrenching that, like, people, leftists in America, sometimes they're like, but you do realize that, like, he was, like, killed because he killed someone. Pure privilege. And that's what I'm saying. In America, people are, like, sad that they have to work 8 hours a day. What do you think people in Iran do? They're just sitting and complaining about having to wear hijab? Like, they also have to work. They have to, like, do a lot of things to, like, buy onions. And you're telling them that, like, oh my god, he just killed someone. Even if he killed someone, why are you okay with capital punishment in Iran but not here? Why are you okay with theocracy in Iran, but you're not okay with theocracy for yourself? Just think about that. That's why, like, the idea of Islamophobia is very laughable to me, because it's another, like, random card of Islamophobia. I'm like, bitch, you are literally running a country. Just because, like, people in America are having a hard time being Muslims, it doesn't mean that, like, you're running a country or having a hard time. A theocracy. That's not the same.
Being against Iran is not Islamophobia.
Yes.
Getting into religion. This is a great survey right here. So they did this survey of Iranians, basically. You know, we can look at what the survey size was. But as you can see, the religion you have to be is less than a third of the country. And if you add agnostic, spiritual, atheist, and none together, it's above that percentage. And down here, this is... I went from religious to be non-religious in the red, breaking down by age demographic. And you can just see, this is what happens when you force it on people.
A lot of other countries and the people of a lot of other countries are content. So I don't know if that's always the case, but it has definitely been the case for Iran, especially because, again, like, we didn't want to be Muslims to begin with. And that's why I was going to say, like, the Muslim world kind of had always, like, their backs against us. They always praised the regime. I've had, like, so many random Muslims reaching out to me being like, why are you against the regime in Iran? They're amazing. They're so against America. And I'm like, go be stupid somewhere else. Like, I don't have time for you. If you want to go lick their boots, go ahead. I'm not. And that's another thing that I fucking hate. Like, when you say random crap, America bad, anyone who says America bad, good, like, hurts people. It doesn't hurt America. It hurts the people living in those countries. And that's another thing that, like, people who don't talk against China don't understand. It's not xenophobic to care for the people of China. It's, as a matter of fact, it's very xenophobic to not care for sweatshop workers for making your clothes.
Yeah.
It's lot more xenophobic to not care for, like, people dying in China because, what, you think that, like, only America has the power to be the big bad wolf? Like, no. A lot of other countries have, like, as much power. Like, especially against their own people. Like, bitch, if America was the sole power in the world, I'm sure we would have all been living a different life. We wouldn't have, like, conflicts, at least, because we would be able to match their power. Obviously, they're not the most powerful country in the nation, like, in the fucking world. Like, people just need to fucking open their mind, eyes, and, like, use their brains something. A little bit more.
They need to change something, at least, because right their now brains. They're on the wrong path.
That's the thing, is a lot of it is just exposure therapy. You gotta give them the immunity to it.
It bugs me so much that a lot of leftists, for some reasons, are against Orwell, but, like, 1984 is literally Iran. Like, when you read that shit, you're like, oh, Big Brother's literally watching us.
Same thing about China. He says that's 1984.
I always say that China is the closest.
Which is why it's funny that you brought it up. But let's leave it there. Ending on promoting our video where I try to convince Jack that 1984 is not a good book.